The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
The Killer Bees!
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham, Mark. Brendan behind the glass. Mark. It is a Wednesday edition of The Killer Bees Mark. On ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Astros win baseball yesterday. They went into the other ballpark in the Big Apple. Over in the Queens, and the Astros blowing out the Mets 9-1. Astros now 5-2 so far through the Gotham Gauntlet. One more against the Mets. First pitch at Wink 3:05. But a great start for the Astros. Like we 7 games is important because 7 games is what it takes to win a best of 7 series in an ALCS. It's important to win a World Series. Their best of 7 series. And going into this Gotham Gauntlet, we were saying, okay, well, what do the Astros need to do for you to be okay? What do the Astros need to do for you to feel good about where the Houston Astros are? And they've played 7 games against the best team in the American League record-wise and the best team in the National League record-wise, and they've won 5 of those 7 games so far, so good for the Gotham Gauntlet.
I mean, could you ask for much more, right? Because the 2 you lost, you should have won.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that, you know, we even looked at it, tried to be realistic and said, look, if you could just break even and you can't in a 9-game swing, that either you come up one short or you get one more, that would be ideal because it's also so hard to win on the road for a majority of these games. And they've taken the brunt of the entire 9-game run and just looked like they were in command the whole time. The crazy stat last night was what Blummer and TK were saying about not since June 18th. Did they have a player at bat where the team was behind in a game that obviously lost on, you know, the late in games to the Yankees where they didn't have at bats batting from behind? But other than that, you look at it and go, could this team be playing any better? And now, and I was tagging you on tweets because watching the guys start to come out of it a little bit, even guys that we had questions whether they could come out of it or not, Bregman, right away, the first thing that I tagged you on was, oh my God, he's going the other way, which mm-hmm. we've been talking about. And he's doing it, like, smoothly and getting results. And just waking him up alone is enough to really jumpstart this team.
Bregman's been doing it for the whole month. He got off to a little bit of a slow start early in June, but has been on fire lately. Since the start of June, he's raised his average, his on-base percentage, and his slugging 20 points. In June, he's got a .398 on-base percentage, which would be 5th best in all of Major League Baseball. But Yuli's the one that I wanted to talk about first. 5-game hitting streak for Yuli Gurriel now, 7 for 18 in that stretch. I was a little hesitant before yesterday, before we start like saying, oh, Yuli's back, which I'm still not there. But the games in New York, he had some seeing eye singles, if we're being completely honest with you. But the game yesterday, like, he homered. He showed some power. He showed some authority.
He also flew out to the 375 mm-hmm. mark in right center field.
That was something that I was encouraged with. Actually, this is going to sound crazy, but I was more encouraged with the deep fly out to right center field than I was the home run. Like, both are great. Both show authority and power in the bat of Yuli Gurriel, which is great. Now, I need to see this for a more sustained period for Yuli Gurriel. I'm not going to proclaim Yuli to be back after a 5-game stretch. Show me over a month like Alex Bregman has shown me. Also, for being completely honest about it, look, Yuli was up in the count 2-0 against one of the mop-up guys for the New York Mets out of the bullpen, was sitting dead red on a fastball on 2-0 in a blowout game, and he knocked it out of the park. So tip your cap to Yuli. I like the signs from Yuli, and I like that we have seen some power and authority. Again, from Yuli Gurriel, I do need to see it for longer than 5 games.
Though. But, you know, and we were talking about this, and I wasn't sure if it was on air or off air yesterday. I'm pulling for him so hard because, because he's been such an integral part of this core of Astros Same. Players that have done so much good for the city, for the team, for baseball, that you find yourself at certain points going, man, am I, like, completely out there in thinking he could still find it. But now, at least on the road in two of the most hostile environments you could possibly put yourself into, he's starting to come around. He's getting multi-hit games. Because we knew he could hit doubles, but to me, he always mixed in the occasional home run. And the other thing that I keep always referencing is, and he was always basically a guarantee when you had a runner on third base and less than two outs. He could get you the run you needed. He wasn't doing either of those things. Now we're seeing some pop. We're seeing some extra power where he's barreling up some balls. And we're seeing the consistency of the hits coming around from a guy that won the darn batting title a year ago. So at least to me, there's more positives in I'm seeing signs.
Sure.
Because that's the same thing we were hoping for with Bregman that's finally come around as well.
See, look, Yuli still, again, he needs to, the signs are there. Like knocking a ball out of the yard, that's a promising sign. You could be on the other end of the argument and say, well, it was a blowout game. It was a 2-0 count against one of the Mets' lesser relievers. Like, I understand both sides of the argument. That's why I need to see more. And look, Yuli over this five-game stretch in New York, the four-game series against the Yankees, the game yesterday against the Mets, Yuli has shown signs of life offensively. Yesterday especially, hitting the ball with some pop and some authority. So you love to see those signs. I'm not going to budge off the stance, though, of we still need to see 3 weeks of Yuli Gurriel before the trade deadline. Because if he goes back into the gutter from here for the next 3 weeks, you're going to be right back where you started before this little five-game stretch. So I hope that this is a sign that Yuli's going to find the fountain of youth. I hope that this is a sign that Yuli can be a productive offensive first baseman for the remainder of the season. That said, the next 3 to 4 weeks are still going to be urgent for Yuli Gurriel as far as being the first baseman for the Astros post-trade deadline.
Well, they're urgent for James Click as well. That's what I was saying yesterday. I mean, you now on so many fronts, but particularly the bullpen and first base, because we talked about the internal solutions that you have if you do try to fix things. And I think to your point about J.J. Mateshevic being a guy that they're at least trying out to see what he could do if they needed to use him at first base. But I think that this is why the time is so pressing but so vital for James Click. He has between now and the trade deadline to figure it out. Like, are the guys going to figure it out on their own, and are they going to be fine position-wise? Or do I have to focus on first base? Because as we said, Bregman's going to be fine. It looks like Jake's going to be in center. We know Maldi's going to be behind the plate. To get a backup catcher, neither here nor there, that's not a pressing urgency. That's something you can get wherever you want, pretty much.
Right.
From the standpoint of the bullpen.
Can I push back real quick before you go to the bullpen?
Yeah, go ahead.
About Jason Castro?
Yeah.
One reason why I don't think I would... I don't know if I want to say it that way. One reason why Jason Castro will still be the backup catcher for the Astros.
Dusty?
Justin Verlander. Because he has turned into Justin Verlander's personal catcher. And I saw, I think it was McTaggart post the numbers whenever he's pitching to Maldi and when he's pitching to Castro. His numbers are far better with Castro than Maldonado.
I did not realize that.
Yeah. So there's one reason why, like, if Verlander wants Castro, Castro's going to be around, let's face it.
Yeah, it's kind of like, yeah, Verlander, it's like the Jordan rules. The JV rules are there, so I could see that. But I think that, again, realistically, if that's something you want to focus on, then you can focus on that, and you can do what you got to do.
What were you saying about the bullpen?
But I think that once you analyze the fact that, you know, what you do need position-wise, then you just focus on the bullpen. And we saw, again, what we talked about yesterday. You want to put an Oli out there because you got to see if he can do anything at all. And he looked absolutely shook last night.
He did.
So that's exactly what he was dealing with the last time.
In a low-leverage spot.
Right. Completely low-leverage, just... free and easy, should be just pumping strikes into the zone. Couldn't find the zone. Walked the first guy. Two hits after that. Ends up giving him a run. Basically, you had a big sigh of relief because he actually had to get Abreu up a little bit to see if he was going to get out of it, though you're up 9-0. And you go, okay, that's his first time back. But if we see a couple more of those,
yeah.
Now it's even more pressing and concerning from a James Click perspective that you're not going to find the solutions internally.
Just like the one game or the five game hitting streak where Yuli Gurriel's, you know, has been showing signs and has been a good player the last five games. I'm not going to like sit here and say that he's not, because he has, and I hope that continues, and I hope that he can be the first baseman for the Astros post trade deadline. Just like we're going to take Yuli Gurriel's little five games in a vacuum and the next 3 weeks are still very critical for Yuli Gurriel, I don't think you could jump to conclusions for one game for Anoli. Like this, okay, he's back. He's back with the Astros. First time he's been back in quite a while. He knows he needs to work on the command. like that's a moment that's probably going to be tough for a lot of young pitchers. So I do want to see Enoli bounce back, but not a great first outing back for Enoli. Now, he relieved Fromber. Astros only needed one relief pitcher yesterday because Fromber continued to Fromber. I mean, he was brilliant again. 8 shutout innings, striking out 5. To me, the most encouraging thing with Fromber is when he limits his walks to 3 or fewer. Yesterday, he had 2. His stuff is so good that just, look, throw it over the plate, right? And force that soft contact, ground ball pitcher. And he continues to shine. 8 wins now, 2.65 ERA. We're looking at an all-star, in my opinion. If Fromber's not on the all-star team, you're going to have to do some explaining to me.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's obviously all correlated with the fact that we found him a song, and once we started playing it, mm-hmm. it just completely turned his season around, and that's why we've been getting so many calls from general managers of other teams to see if we would consider doing similar things for teams we don't love and care about.
Well, Click talks to us all the time.
Yeah, but we have to do that off the record because he has a contract with this flagship. But overall, we are influential, but the fact that he has figured it out between his ears, and like you said, not just from a control standpoint, Jeremy, the thing that was impressed me the most, even though it was a little bit of a blip, was how he handled the home plate umpire last night.
Oh, yeah.
He was getting absolutely squeezed on the bottom of the zone, and in the past, that would have absolutely rattled his cage to the point where he wouldn't focus on what he needed to do and where he needed to throw the ball, and that's where a lot of the extra walks would come from. Last night, and thankfully, Maldi was part of it, too. But he was able to take a couple strolls around the mound. He was able to kind of internalize things till he couldn't. And then when he walked off the mound after getting out of it, that's when he was able to kind of vent a little bit. But he did what he had to do that he might not have done the same way in the past. And that was impressive to me.
Did you see that leadership from Maldonado yesterday?
Oh, it's just mound visit.
Not only the mound visit, but the fact that he was there during the substance check. He paid a substance check visit. To make sure
he calmed down, right?
Yeah, he didn't want a Bumgarner situation.
Right, because that's exactly who I was going to reference. Because, yeah, there was a chance he could get tossed with as pissed off as he looked on some. And those calls were bad, let's be honest. There were some, because later in the game, he was given that zone.
Well, he got a bigger zone as the game
obviously,
got
he wants
out of hand.
To get out of there, but still, I just thought that he squeezed him a little too much.
You mentioned the Alex Bregman heating up. He's been much better in June. How does a Bregman bounce back impact this Houston Astros lineup and the other things, too? Like, does Bregman bouncing back, does that impact how you view first base? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776 on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. It's Killer Beast, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Warrior sound!
Real. Let's go! Fun. Sports. Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
It's the ace of spades, because Justin Verlander will be on the bump. Can I still call it Shea Stadium?
You can. It's not accurate.
But I know. It's Citi Field, but I like calling it Shea Stadium. I love the airplanes that you can hear on the broadcast flying in and out of LaGuardia.
It is weird that it's cool. Not as noticeable as it was at Shea. Maybe that's because...
See, I don't remember. I went to Shea whenever I was a kid.
Uh-huh.
But I don't remember it being less or more noticeable. I know Callis and Blum were saying that it's a little less noticeable.
Yeah, but definitely maybe... the one thing I was thinking about is as they were kind of panning the outfield, the outfield at Shea was pretty wide open.
Yeah.
So that you could get a lot more sound to come in. Maybe because it is very... very tall and built up. You don't catch as much of that.
Now you're talking about sound waves and science.
Well, you know,
listen to that.
I've had a little experience in that over my years.
We got a couple of texts in. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. So 7223 is saying on Google it says the Astros game starts at 12:10. And then 2662 says can't wait for the Astros 3:05 start today. Which of those two is a loyal listener to the Killer Bees and understands
that
the bit?
Would be the second of the two.
Yeah, it's the Astros 3:05 first pitch today. You can listen to the Killer Bees from 12 until 3 leading up to that. We're talking about the impact of what Bregman could mean to this team. We'll get to that in a bit. 4683, Enoli has been hot in AAA this season. Hopefully you can get smooth out there in the bigs and continue
We've said that great season.
He's got to show command.
Some guys
at the big
are AAA all-stars that just aren't meant to be in the big leagues because it's a different ball game when they get up there.
Yeah, I mean, they called 4A players, right?
Yeah.
Jason Lane, 4A player, had the one really good year and then was a AAA all-star and a major league bench player.
I want a blast from the past for you. Dan Lange.
That was a basketball player.
Yes. He was the basketball equivalent. Dan Lange was a NBA practice all-star that whenever Barkley and those guys used to talk about it all the time.
Dan Lange.
Like, Dan Lange at practice looked like he could win a dunk contest and be like a 20-point-per-game scorer. Dan Lange at the Compact Center with the lights on was terrible.
I never thought that I would hear the name again, especially when talking about for a baseball player.
Just going with the same kind of analogy from a basketball
player. I like it. I just didn't see it coming. It caught me by surprise. 4683, thoughts on these potential outfield trade targets? Let's go one through, bullet point by bullet point. Andrew Benintendi. We talked about him a little bit yesterday.
It would be a nice addition. Depends on what you got to give up.
I also worry about him. I mean, he's only a left fielder. And now you're looking at Tucker in center. You're looking at Brantley and Wright, who's on the injured list. I don't love what it does for you defensively. I don't think you gain enough with the bat that overcompensates for the defense. He is an improvement with the bat, but the defense worries me. Ian
Happ. Had some good years with Boston.
I think he's a good player. He just doesn't play center field.
Right.
So now you're talking about Tucker playing center and Brantley playing right. I don't like that. Yeah. Ian Happ for the Cubs.
He's young, but is he consistent? Is he a guy that when put on the big stage, when you need him in big games, is he going to be the guy? I don't think I'd be willing to take that chance.
I saw him play. He actually went to Cincinnati. So I saw him play a lot.
Okay.
That's the one. Remember I was talking about yesterday that I spent an evening in the press box with Elias.
Oh, yeah.
That he was out there watching Ian Happ. Jeff Luna was there earlier that day, too, but he left before the rainout. But they were watching Ian Happ whenever Cincinnati came into town. To me, he's like a super utility player. I don't know if he's enough of an upgrade. They said Albert Amara for Cincinnati. To me, he's another one of those guys. He's kind of got, like, he does not get on base a ton. I just don't think that that's much of an upgrade with Amaro. Now, the two names mentioned here that I would be in favor of, depending on the price, and the price is always important, Brian Reynolds for Pittsburgh. I like him quite a bit. And then Cedric Mullins from Baltimore, who's not been as good this year as last year.
Not having a 300-plus type batting average year like he had a year ago when everybody was talking about he was an all-star, but is a guy that could fit very, very well because of the fact that when he fit into this, where he would fit into this lineup and he would see better pitches, I think he'd be fine. But again, everything is based on price, you know, and the Orioles and the Pirates are almost always in a rebuild, but they're always, because of that, knowing that, you know, they have very few assets that have value. So when they do have one or two in the case of the Orioles for sure, and the Pirates are probably close, you look at that and say, they're going to want youth and they're going to want multiple guys because they don't have that many guys they can trade away to get better.
Right. Yeah. So that's, to me, the price on those would be significant if you could pull it off without giving up like a Hunter Brown or a Christian Javier. Then we can chat. I would love that. 4683 saying JV already has one out in the first inning. Tell me you're not a loyal listener to the Killer Bees without telling me
that's
you're not a loyal listener to the Killer Bees. The game starts at 3:05. 8437, I don't know that I can count on Yuli bouncing back. He may have it in him, but the team also has a chance to go out and get someone that's already proved they are consistent this year. I'd still prefer Josh Bell. Bell's on the short list for me if you are upgrading at first. I think Mancini would be on that short list as well. But Yuli has an audition here for the next 3 weeks. If Yuli for the next 3 weeks can be more of what he has been the last 5 days, as opposed to what he has been previous to the last 5 days, then Yuli's going to be the first baseman. He has a chance to win the job after August 2nd, but he's got to continue being productive at first base offensively, because defensively, you know, you get one of the best pickers at first base in the league.
You've actually convinced me on the fact that there is a spot to be had for Mancini, regardless of where it would be. And I would be very, very intrigued by the opportunity to get him on this ball club because of the fact that, like you and I've talked about on top of everything else, the point that I keep making is, as much as he has played in a cavernous, like, Astrodome-ish-typed ballpark in Baltimore,
yep,
if he came to Minute Maid Park, he could just absolutely go nuts.
His ball fight plays.
Yeah, and I think it would be fun to watch. And that you could get an unexpected extra bat with power into the lineup would be fantastic. And that's a guy that I would pursue. But again, it depends on what you have to give up to get him. Probably not as much because he's got this one. And then, what is it, a mutual for the year after?
Yep. So I mean, if he wanted to cash in this offseason, he could cash in this offseason, which I expect him to do.
But again, if he shows out in his last couple months with the Astros and they make a run, they're probably going to look to add him and say he could be a guy that could be in our core for the next 3 or 4 years.
And Yuli's contract's up after this year. I mean, I think it'd be somebody that you're actually looking for. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Keep telling us that you are not a loyal listener to the Killer Bees without telling us you're not a loyal listener to the Killer Bees. 2702 says game started already, LOL. It starts at 305-7888. Are y'all aware the Astros are on right now, not at 3? No. Astros start at 3:05. You listen to the Killer Bees from 12 to 3. Astros begin at 3:05. 0754, can I still be a loyal listener if I watch on Twitch and listen on the radio? Can. Yeah.
We'll allow it.
Yeah, but you maybe the bit went over your head.
Yeah, but you know, you might be getting acclimated to the Bees. That's fine in the hive, but understand that this is what we do. But yes, the most ideal thing that we can encourage you to do, turn the sound down on the TV, listen to us, watch the game, and everything's fine.
I don't know what you're talking about. 1626 is saying that it's the bottom of the first two outs, game's on. They must be talking about like the Pittsburgh game or something, as we have AT&T Sportsnet on in our studio. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. So Yuli's been good over the last five games. Five-game hitting streak, homered yesterday, deep fly out to right field. He's 7-for-18 in the last five games. That's good for Yuli Gurriel. You mentioned the other one, Alex Bregman. Who had three hits yesterday. Took it the other way on one of the in the first inning that knocked in a run. It knocked in two, I believe, right? The little liner down the right field line. Later in the game, he had the base hit up the middle. He had three hits yesterday. We mentioned a couple of times now that he has raised his average, his on-base, and his slugging 20 points in June. Slashing 272, 398 on-base, 432 slugging in the month of June. How does a break? Because, look, I don't think Bregman's going to get to 18 and 19. Like numbers, I think he can get somewhere close. I think he'll be an offensive, like an on-base percentage guy like he was those years. I'm not sure whoever slugged to that point. But how does a Bregman bounce back? And we've seen signs of this all month. Impact everything we've talked about with this team. How does it influence the lineup, the runs per game? How does it influence maybe even making a move at first base?
I think it influences in a lot of ways because we've seen that this lineup has shown in the past the ability to kind of put Band-Aids on blemishes in other positions when all the guys that you know can hit. And that's one of the reasons why there was more concern with who do you try and replace and how quickly can you get replacements, was because not only did you have to worry about Yuli having a slow start, but Bregman was not someone you expected because you heard he was healthy. That was the main reason why he was kind of down last year. You expected him to be right where he always was at the top of the lineup, and he wasn't doing that. The fact that he is now gives you more encouragement that when you can go still six solid in this top of this lineup, if you slide Yuli all the way down and you realize maybe he's not going to win a batting title, he's not going to hit with as much power, but if he continues to progress and he can still be the guy that by playoff time is making good contact, and like I said, the main thing is getting guys in from third base and getting hits and moving guys around instead of striking out, looking like you can't catch up with a fastball, you can shade the center field and catcher to be fine.
I think it extends your lineup, right? Like we talk about in the past how you're getting, I think you've brought up this point too, which I think is a very good one. Like you're getting way more than above average offensive production at second base. Jose Altuve is one of the best offensive second basemen in baseball, if not the best offensive second baseman in baseball. Jeremy Pena coming off the IL hasn't been Jeremy Pena since he went, you know, before he was on the IL, but you're getting an offensive plus player at a defensive position. Same thing even a little bit at third base. Like third base isn't as offensive as a position as it used to be. So I think Bregman can play you into plus offense at third base. Maybe even Jake in center field, who had a couple of hits yesterday as well. Mm-hmm. So like if you're getting other offensive production, you can live with, you know, below average offense at first. So I think that it's something that could, one, extend the offense, and maybe it does give Yuli Gurriel a bigger, like a longer stay at first base. 713-780-ESPN. We'll ask you, Hive, how does a Bregman bounce back impact everything that we talk about with this team? The run production per game, the need for a bat at the deadline, the upgrade at first base for Yuli. Does Bregman change all of that? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Also, when we return, Dusty did something yesterday that I love, and he did something that I hate. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
razor-sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Interning for us today is Christian. Does a terrific job. We appreciate all of we appreciate his service to the Killer Bees and ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. So we're telling you that the Astros begin at 3:05. Justin Verlander hasn't thrown over 20 pitches in the first inning. Yordan Alvarez was not up with two outs, nobody on in the three spot. It's not nothing going to the top of the second as Google and MLB app or wherever you digest your Astro information. They're all lying to you. The Astros game begins at 3:05, and people are calling in 713-780-ESPN. And telling intern Christian that the Astros game is already on. We've had two callers. People are tweeting us. Tons of people are texting us.
The audacity to not trust us.
713-780-3776 that the Astros are already on.
They already have good morning or breakfast with the Astros on AT&T
Sportsnet.
That's
right. I realize they're doing that.
Yeah, which goes up until 9 a.m., which I'd actually rather go later because then I can get on a treadmill and watch the last three innings of the game. But they're doing this thing called lunch with the Astros as well sometimes, depending on the day.
More reliable source, the Killer Bees or Adam Schefter?
Killer Bees.
Killer Bees or Woj?
Push.
Killer Bees. Killer Bees bomb, baby.
Yeah, I'm with Jeremy.
Woj doesn't lie. I think we're better than Schefter.
Well, Woj thought that Jabari was going number one an hour before the draft.
But a half hour
before the draft. Dude's
a fraud. No, because a half hour before the draft, he changed his mind. He got better sources.
He's a fraud.
Schefter's the fraud trying to get clicks and viewers.
7541. I'm literally listening to the game right now. It's on MLB Network, you clowns. The Astros start at 3:05. I don't know what you're talking about.
Who's a clown? He's watching it on MLB Network when he should be watching it on AT&T Sportsnet if you're a true Astros fan with the Astros announcers.
He's got a few hours to make that decision, but we do appreciate you listening to us. 713-780-3776. Okay, my bad. Just turned you guys on. Love you guys. We'll watch on tape delay. You don't have to watch on tape delay. It's live at 3:05. I did appointments at 3. Go Stros. Myers is back. Loyal listeners, sir. 1557. I hate to tell you, but the game is on. Watching it on MLB.tv. You must be watching last night's game. What are you talking about? 713-780-3776. Astros are playing right now. That's from 409. Caleb actually sent us a real text. I guess we can say this. The bottom line is you have to trade for another bat in the lineup at the deadline. Whether it's center field, first base, or catcher doesn't really matter in my opinion. Besides that, I'd like to see them pick up a left-handed reliever. That's kind of where I stand. Like, I would like to see an offensive upgrade. If it's in center field, it's in center field. If it's at first base, it's at first base. I don't think catcher is as likely as the other two.
It's not. And like I said, based on what happened already previously, and people point to the immaculate innings in the same game, the more important thing is the way that Maldi handled the pitching staff during the toughest stretch of the season against the best competition you're going to face. And he basically kept your starters in every single game and worked in tandem with them to throw some of the best baseball they've thrown all season and beyond, to where you realize, look, he's trying hard at the plate. He's working on it to try and be better. But no matter what he is offensively, he just brings too much to the table defensively, and also the intangible of just being that guy that, one, we know Dusty plays loyalty and trust.
Yeah.
And in the clubhouse, they absolutely adore this guy. There's no way they're going to do anything with him.
Intern Christian just added another one to the tally board. Now, three callers at 713-780-ESPN. They're telling us that the Astros are already on and, like, there's one out, nobody on base for Kyle Tucker. That can't be true. They start at 3:05. 713-780-3776. 9633. I'm loving hearing about all these people texting about the Astros on. What time zone are they in? Well, they're playing in New York, so they're in the East. They're in the East time zone. 3:05 first pitch Central, though. 9633. This is gold. All the people texting in. 1557 said, turn it on to the other station. You'll hear for yourself.
Robert, you shut your whore mouth. We're not doing anything like that. That's not what we're about here.
We're doing a show, 1557. How are we going to turn it down the dial when we're doing a show? That's why the Astros are playing at 3:05, is because we're doing a show. 8693, the trick is to turn the ESPN app up on your phone and the volume down on the TV.
Bing, bing, bing.
I learned that a long time ago. It's a winner, but you don't have to worry about the TV until 3:05. 1496 said it's the top of the second inning. 9147, it is on.
Hogwash.
It's 3:05. 3:05 first pitch. 713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776. Yordan Alvarez homered again yesterday. He's on pace for 51, which would break the home run record for the Astros, 47, set by Bagwell. in 2000, but he was in a different spot in the lineup yesterday. Dusty did something that I love and something that I hate, but the hate outweighs the love because we know Brantley went on the injured list. It sounds like Brantley's going to be – it doesn't sound like a long-term injury for Michael Brantley. It sounds like it's going to be maybe a couple of weeks. Not sure it's going to be like the 10 days on the IL and the back, but it doesn't seem like it's long-term listening to Michael Brantley talk courtesy of Brian McTaggart. But because Brantley's out of the lineup, that means you got to do some things with what you're doing with the batting order. And Yordan Alvarez in the three-hole yesterday. Look, I know it worked. I know the Astros scored 9 runs. I know that Yordan homered. I know all of that stuff. And look, I think sometimes that people like overreact to batting orders. I realize that it's not a very big deal in the full scale of things. But at the same time, I'm a big believer in optimization and believe that if you really want to score tons of runs, and look, the Astros haven't scored tons of runs this year. They should be scoring more runs than they are.
Your telecast was actually worried about scoring too many runs because when you do that, you go completely into a drought the next game and then it starts you on a downward spiral. That shows you that this isn't the normal Astro teams of the past that could put a crooked number up multiple times in a game and destroy you and break your heart while doing what they do because they just haven't been consistent.
Yeah, so I'm a big believer in optimization. And we've talked about this too, like with this Astros lineup. You have Yordan Alvarez, who is arguably the best hitter in baseball, and I would say that he is the best hitter in baseball in June. So whenever I have the best hitter in baseball, the first thing that I'm doing whenever I fill out my lineup card that day, if I know that Yordan Alvarez doesn't have a day off before his day off, I'm putting him in the fourth spot. Every single day that he is playing, that is my cleanup hitter. No exceptions, no and, ifs, or buts about it. He's my four-hole hitter, and then I'm figuring out everything else after Yordan Alvarez.
Are you also to the level of, when you say that, of saying that I'm going to put the same guys around him that I've been consistently protecting him with before and after so that I get the same kind of results as well? Because I hear what you're saying, but I also know that the new school way of thinking in baseball is – like Aaron Judge batting leadoff for the Yankees, and he's their best hitter.
That's not the three-hole.
Right, it's not the three-hole, I get it. And we've talked about the fact that Altuve, with the amount of production that he's given you, it's really been empty production because he hasn't had a chance to knock in a whole lot of guys because he's batting leadoff. So I'm just saying there's two schools of thought, and obviously one of them is the fact that a lot of managers don't believe in taking your best hitter with power and average and putting him first because you don't have as many opportunities to knock people in.
Yeah, like the Aaron Judge in the leadoff spot or in the two holes, like the new modern day sabermetric
Schwarber
analytical
off, guys like that.
That's the analytical approach. The best hitter on your team batting in the three hole, that's the old school approach. That's the Miguel Cabrera in the three hole. That's the Jeff Bagwell in the three hole. But the reason that I hate it, to be completely honest with you, and look, I know that it worked yesterday, and I know that batting orders can be somewhat overrated over the course of the whole year, but if you're trying to score more runs for a team that has not scored a whole lot of runs to this point, and you feel like the offense has disappointed to this point, you have to optimize the lineup. Like, the third spot in the batting order is the one spot in the batting order that bats with two outs, nobody on, more than any other spot in the entire lineup. Heck, Yordan Alvarez today was up with two outs, nobody on. Whoops, first pitch at 3:05. But that kind of illustrates the point. Like, if he is your best hitter, the dude needs to be in the fourth spot or he needs to be batting first and second. The third spot is old school, Dusty gonna Dusty. I understand that you get him up in the first inning, but a lot of times if he gets up in the first inning, there's two outs, nobody on. And newsflash, if somebody is on base, the cleanup spot's going to bat in the first inning anyways. So I hated Yordan in the three hole, but I did brand him foot and mouth it because Yordan went off and the Astros lineup went off. So it all worked out. 713-780-3776.
I just got a wild thought, and sometimes they just pop into my head.
No
way.
I just
got this wild premonition for some reason that Yuli's going to stay hot. I just feel like for some reason this extra base, getting these extra base hits is going to continue.
You think he's going to have a 6-game hitting streak?
I feel like it's good. I feel like Ian, King of Twitch, have motivated me even more to believe the positivity that comes from our show every day. That, again, we change lives. It just happens to be the lives of those that play in blue and orange with the Astros. I feel something good for Yuli today.
I hope you're right. 713-780-ESPN.
310, or what? His first at bat would probably be more, 3:30-ish, 3:45.
Maybe the bottom of the 3 o'clock hour. 713-780-3776. So as much as I hated the Yordan, and I did hate the Yordan more than the thing that I loved, I did love the Jeremy Pena in the two-hole, and I think that Dusty Baker is going to do it again today. I do like Pena in the second spot. Like, because you have Brantley out for, let's just say it's going to be 2 weeks, maybe three, see what he can do at the top of the order. See if he can be an on-base guy. See if he can be a spark with the speed that he has as well. So as much as I hated the Yordan in the three-hole, I was pretty good with the Pena in the second spot.
Yeah, you know what? I think that there's a couple things here. You want him to get back to being the Peña before the injury. You want to get him back as quick as possible to being the guy that has basically put the league on notice that the Astros have another young shortstop that's going to be around for a while. It's doing some things. So you feel like he's going to see better pitches and be in a good spot, too, to be able to do that, being at the top of the lineup. So I'm fine with that. I have more issues when Dusty does the kind of randomly weird decisions that he makes where he won't move a guy down or he won't move a guy up when they're hot or he'll sit a guy when they're really on fire. So I was fine with the change in the lineup, and he separated the two lefties in the lineup, though I really like back-to-back having, you know, Yordan and Tuck. But you know what? It, like you said, it worked out for them. It's not going to be forever.
Yep.
But if Peña shows to you by the time this is done that he belongs in the top half of the lineup, it's just another great problem to have.
That's the other thing about the Yordan in the three spot is that he also broke up Yordan Tucker.
Yep.
And I love the fact that you had Yordan Tucker back-to-back. I thought that's the reason the Tucker's numbers started to elevate, the RBI numbers, stuff like that. And I feel like Yordan's getting better pitches to hit. Like, if you have Bregman behind you, and look, we just talked about Bregman's uptick, but he's still not slugging. Like, if you're a pitcher and you have Yordan in the box and you have Bregman on deck, what's your mentality and your philosophy pitching to Yordan? I don't think you're going to get the same pitches for Yordan to hit as opposed to Tucker hitting behind him that's giving him that protection. 713-780-3776, our HRMP listener line. I love how everyone is telling you the game is on. They're definitely not loyal listeners. I have my ear pod in and the Astros game on mute for your guys. We appreciate that for you guys.
Yes, we do.
7869. You won't have to worry about the game, though, until 3:05. 4683 saying, since the game starts at 3:05, y'all want to start taking bets on the game? Yeah, we would love to do that, 4683. Let's go ahead and you send us the kind of bets that you want to make, and then we'll tell you which bets that we're willing to make, because that's something that I wouldn't mind doing. Also, intern Christian letting us know that we've had two more calls telling us that the Astros are already on. They're saying that it's like in the bottom of the second, there's no score, there's one out, nobody on base, stuff like that. I don't know what they're talking about.
By the way, the lineup just came out. I don't know if you've seen it or not. For the 3:05 start.
Yeah.
So your boy Peña's still in the two hole. Bregman at cleanup.
Yeah, same lineup pretty much, right?
Yeah, Yuli at six.
Except Castro.
Except for Castro, because again, that was the intangible I didn't realize.
When personal
you saw
catcher.
The personal catcher of JV. Was it Cole that had the personal catcher here?
I think that was, he might have, but I know he especially had one this first year in New York because
backup catcher.
He hated pitching to the big slugging Gary Sanchez. 8758 says, the game is on, fellas. SRD. What does SRD mean? I'm not sure what SRD means. 713-780-3776. Game starts at 3:05. 713-780-3776. Coming up next, free agency starts tomorrow in the NBA. Yes. Anything you'd like to see the Rockets do? There's one interesting name.
Trade Eric Gordon.
That the Rockets might be kicking the tires on. If that moves Blanker's needle, we'll see. It's next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
In Fuentes on our Twitch, twitch.tv, saying, we
big
get it,
fan.
Casuals don't know. Papa713 said, I just turned it on to the other station. They're playing now, unless it's a replay for some weird reason. Believe it or not, it's could replay. For whatever reason. 713-780-3776. People are texting us saying that Jason Castro led off the top of the third inning with a base hit. Game starts at 3:05. 713-780-ESPN.
Yeah. I hope they're right. That'd be a great premonition to have come true.
It would.
To see Castro the Astro kind of get back to his form.
Yeah, it'd be nice to see him get some offensive production instead of just being the personal catcher for Justin Verlander.
God, he looks like a special advisor to the general manager already. He just really does.
Yeah, he does have that look to him a little bit. He is their representative for the MLBPA. Free agency starts tomorrow in the association. Do you
love
like
it.
When people call it the association?
No.
So if free agency starts tomorrow in the association, anything you'd like to see the Rockets do?
Yeah, stay away from free agency.
Okay.
Unless they can get a bargain. I mean, I don't think that they should be looking to spend any big dollars in long-term money because they still have to get Wall off the books this year. And you really don't want to bring in someone that's going to require playing time that you don't want to give up with the young guys that you have. If you can add a big, if you can add a somewhat younger big to the stable of bigs that you have, then I'm fine with it because it probably is not going to cost you too much, especially on a shorter-term deal that can kind of help to enhance what you already have. But this is the year that you really see the growth and development of the guys over the last 2 years that you've brought in.
See, this is the name that I saw. I think our guy Kelly Eco was reporting this a little bit earlier that said Mo Bamba.
I was going to say, la, 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 Mo Bamba.
Yeah, I love that song. I love La Bamba. That was my walk-up song whenever I hit the five times that I did when I was a senior playing baseball at my varsity. So I heard it five times. But I love that song. So if Mo Bamba signs here, you know, more reason to that. I'm intrigued by Mo Bamba. Like, I'm not, like, let's be honest, I haven't watched a whole lot of Orlando Magic basketball. That might come as a shock to some of you. I've not seen Mo Bamba play a whole lot in the NBA. I look at his numbers, and the numbers look good. Like, he's a decent scorer, scores in double figures, decent rebounder, blocks some shots, and he actually hits threes really well.
He's athletic, and he's strong. And because he's young, he can run the floor. So I think he'd be a good fit. I mean, look, for a lot of selfish reasons, I want Boban to stick around because I think he's a fun guy,
yeah,
and he's a quote machine. He's a good locker room guy, and he's not bad when he's on the floor. It's just that he's big and slow, and that doesn't fit the rest of the personnel you have on the floor.
Right.
So you need to be more realistic, and if you're being that and say, can you get – depends on the price, but if you could get Mo Bamba and add him to the young stable of talent you have in the locker room, I'm all for it.
See, I like – he's fine to just be a spot on the roster, in my opinion, right? Like Boban. I don't expect him to get minutes. So, like, would you be okay if the Rockets signed Mo Bamba?
No.
Yeah, I see. I look at him, like, because a lot of people don't want the Rockets to pick up a center because they love Şengün. And I understand that. Like, I want Şengün to get a lot of minutes, too.
Yeah, but, I mean, look, the thing is they're still figuring out Şengün. Some people still think he should be a four. And I think that he is your five in the prototypical NBA. But he's still got so much to learn and development to get through that you're hurting his development if you sit him on the bench and you got a guy that's taking up a lot of his minutes.
See, where I stand on that, though, is if, like, you have three bigs that can really – like, Bamba's the only one that's pigeonholed into a five. Like, Şengün can play the four and the five. I think Jabari actually can play the four and the five in a small ball lineup.
He's so he just needs,
I mean,
to
Christian
get stronger.
Christian Wood played the five in small ball
true,
lineups.
But
Jabari,
I mean,
can play the five in small ball lineups.
I don't know that Jabari is – I don't think he's as close to, from a defensive experience standpoint, in the NBA switches and the things that you got to learn to do and things like that. I don't think he's there yet, and I also think he just has to get stronger.
Even then, it doesn't matter, because here's where I'm getting at. If you just combine the four and the five, there's 48 minutes in an NBA basketball game. That's 96 minutes. Neither Jabari or Şengün's going to play 48 minutes a game. If you just divide the 96 by three, that's 32 minutes per game. So if Şengün's getting 32, Jabari's getting 32, and let's just say you sign Mo Bamba and he's getting 32 minutes, I am fine with that. In fact, I think that the Rockets need another big long-term to be part of that rotation. And we talk about how it needs to be somebody, too, that is unique. Because Jabari can shoot. Jabari can defend. Şengün's kind of a high-post player. He can get into the low post and score a little bit, too. But he's not a rim protector. He's not an uber athlete. He's more of a basketball player. Like, the one unique player in big, specifically, that you can bring in that I think fits in nicely with a Jabari and a Şengün. And, again, if you have a three-big rotation how many minutes? 96 minutes that you have combined out of the four and five. I think that you need that, and I think that a Mo Bamba type would be the perfect complement for the other two.
I was going to say, for depth and foul trouble alone, and we know Şengün's quick to get into foul trouble. Yeah, adding an extra body, and I don't think he's going to, like I said, I don't expect him to be too expensive. I think that's fine. I think that's the kind of add that you make at this point in your development in the rebuild. And I think that it doesn't affect anybody's. It doesn't stunt anybody's growth or affect any developments. So I think that's great. I just don't want them to overspend on an older veteran that's going to be just another version of the guys you already are shipping out that are going to be disgruntled playing on a losing team with young kids that are going to make mistakes and they think that they should be playing more and the team should be doing more. You don't want that anymore.
I want to ask BK about Bamba. Maybe we can get him on for crosstalk because he was a Texas player,
yeah,
and BK likes Texas and Kansas basketball. But if you look at Bamba's, I mean, Bamba's young too.
He actually was overrated coming out.
Yep. But he was drafted way too early.
Way too early and way too high. But to his credit, he worked hard on his offensive game, which I thought had limitations. And he's actually developed it to the point where you have to respect, like you said, his three-point shot and his ability to be around the basket to get, whether it's alley-oops or putbacks,
yeah.
He has some touch around the basket.
I mean, I don't want to sit here and go box score analyst like we saw a lot of people do with Christian Wood. Like, you look at Christian Wood's numbers, and it's like, wow, this guy's a really good player.
That's what Clyde says.
Clyde does think that. Go Cougs. But then you watch Christian Wood, and you watch the Rockets over 82 games, and it's like, okay, this guy could be a negative player, even though that he's filling up the stat sheet. Like, basketball, you need to get a feel and a flow of the game. So, like, I haven't seen that from Mo Bamba. So I don't want to sit here and be like, oh, yeah, Mo Bamba's a home run. He'd be a great addition. But he has this – oh, we got six. We got number six, 713-780-3776. People are calling in and telling us that the Astros are in the bottom of the third in a scoreless game with one out. That can't be the case. Uh-uh. The Astros are playing at 305, 713-780-3776. But Bamba, 10.5 points, 8 rebounds, and was a 38% three-point shooter playing 26 minutes a game. And, well, he didn't shoot a lot. He shot 4 threes a game. So I'm intrigued by Mo Bamba. I'm not going to sit here and pound the table saying the Rockets need Mo Bamba to help their rebuild. But I'm very intrigued by that type of player with what the Rockets currently have.
Ocho says Mitchell Robinson's a free agent too. Mitchell Robinson would be a great fit here because he's actually developed maybe even more than Mo Bamba, stronger in terms of his NBA game, in terms of what he brings to the table, but not physically stronger. But that's another guy. The only problem is he's going to be looking to get paid.
You think you'll get more than Bamba?
I think he's going to get more money because there's a lot of teams that took notice of him and what he was able to do with the Knicks, with a team that he wasn't featured on and wasn't getting a whole lot of when he was on the floor. Boy, he put up numbers and he was effective against bigs.
Yeah.
But any kind of addition like that, this is like we were talking about with the Texans going from the Fighting Rex Burkheads to the young guys that maybe early in their career got misplaced with the wrong system on teams, and you still could find a lot of good in. I think Mo Bamba's that guy. I think, you know, again, like you said, it doesn't hurt that he played at Texas too. So, you know, maybe he wants to return to the state and he could feel like he could resurrect everything even more by getting involved with this young team. Because on the ground floor, he comes in, he does his job, he does the same kind of thing he was doing in Orlando, and Rafael Stone and those guys go, you know what? Here's a guy we could keep around for a couple of years.
And exactly, because he's young. I mean, he's still, and Mitchell Robinson, young too. They're similar, like, size. I think they're two very different players. Mitchell Robinson, known for his D. He's probably like a walking double-double. He averaged close to that last year for the Knicks and was only 23 years old. But I think he is going to make more money on the open market. Mm-hmm. But my biggest thing with, like, in free agency is I'm with you too. I don't want to add a veteran that's going to take up a lot of usage of this team. I'm cool with adding a veteran that's going to show the ropes to Jalen Green and show the ropes to Jabari Smith. But if you add a rim protector, I don't think it necessarily takes away from the minutes of Jabari and Şengün. You have 48 minutes of the four, you have 48 minutes of the five, and you really have nobody behind them right now. Like, Garuba is somebody that's been talked about. I'd rather have Mo Bamba than Garuba getting those
Garuba's
minutes.
Garuba's not a center. He's really not a four. They think he could eventually be a four.
Wing? See, I don't think he's a wing because I think he has zero touch offensively.
Well, he has no offense, but when they drafted him, they thought he was going to be a 3-and-D
guy.
See,
I look at him as like a stretch four, but without the stretch because he can't shoot, but like a small ball four.
He's a tweener. He's between a 3 and a 4, and that's another problem. But you're right. They didn't realize how limited he was offensively. That's why Eason was the guy that they went after, because now they got a guy that already comes in with offense that they know that they have. So I think that when you look at it, I'm not worried about Garuba taking time from anybody. I think that it is, instead of experimenting with trying to get guys that you know either aren't going to want to stay, like Olynyk, who was a good fit short term, but that was with a different bunch of guys, to Daniel Tice a year ago, who you went out and gave $10 million a year to, but realized it wasn't the right fit for you or for him, and he found his home back where he belongs in Boston. So you want the guys that have the age fit, the development fit, and the fact that you understand your role fit. And I think Bamba would be that guy. I mean, I think he's been constantly overshadowed in Orlando. But if he knows that he's actually going to be included in a nucleus of guys that could be possibly long-term, I think that's what he wants.
Double-digit score. I think has the potential to be a double-digit rebound guy and shoots 38% from three and can block shots at the rim. It intrigues me.
Think that from the Jabari Smith standpoint, on the flip side, in a good way, he can play some three. So you can move him around and try him at the wing. You can try him at the three. It depends on his foot quickness defensively. But I think getting his shot off and being able to knock down shots, I think he can be that guy. But I also think that it's a learning curve for him to just understand the physicality, speed of the game, and everything of the NBA. He's going to get in foul trouble. He's going to get tired. He's going
to
sit down.
Yeah, I mean, to add a five to this team, I don't think hurts Jabari or Şengün's minutes at all. Would you kick the tires on DeAndre Ayton?
Nope, too much money. He wants a max deal, and it's not the right fit at the right time for this team. He's very young.
He's only going to be 24 next year.
It doesn't matter. He's better suited with a different team where he can get the money that he wants, and he also wants to be the focus at some point.
Yep.
And I don't think that's the right – let him go to the Pistons and try and fit in with those young guys. But I don't need him here in Houston.
To me, it's the Tyreek Hill to the Texans. Like, oh, the Texans should go get a playmaking receiver. No, it's not time to put a Ferrari in the driveway of a trailer park. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Is David Culley still the coach if he doesn't push back at Nick Caserio? And if he was still the head coach, would you be all right with that? Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. If David Culley was still the head coach, you know, I'd probably drink more than I currently drink. And we know that I love Gentle Ben. I like a good drink at the end of the day. Vodka, gin, bourbon, all part of the rotation for me. And Gentle Ben Spirits does all of that, and they do it better than anybody else. Gentle Ben is a line of ultra-premium Texas spirits using their state-of-the-art, innovative Proceeto craft technology that is simply better in purity. It's better in aroma, and it's better in taste than your favorite brand of vodka, gin, or bourbon. They are unrivaled. Look, I know you have your favorite brand that you like at the end of the night, end of the week, but trust me now, thank me later. Take the challenge I did. Try a sip of Gentle Ben, compare it to your brand. You're going to taste the huge difference that I did when Ricky Ford, owner of Gentle Ben Spirits, A&M Class of 85, had me out to his tasting room in Alvin to see what I thought. Ever since then, I've been a Gentle Ben man. We're going out to that tasting room in Alvin in July, too, for a live remote 12 to 7. Make sure you mark that on your calendars. But you can find Gentle Ben Vodka and Gin at Total Wine and Specs. Also online, gentleben.com. Also, when you head to that tasting room in Alvin, try their bourbon. It is fantastic. 94-proof bourbon that was the winner of the double platinum at the Ascot Awards this year. And it's also only exclusive to that tasting room in Alvin, so you got to swing on by to see that. Also, there is a special Gentle Ben tasting coming up this week. Total Wine in Pearland, a Meet the Maker event. The one and only Ricky Ford, Gentle Ben president, he'll be on hand talking the smooth spirits and sampling our uniquely approachable gin and vodka. That is tomorrow, 4 to 7, the Total Wine in Pearland. Swing on by, say hello to Ricky Ford. Say you heard about him right here on the Killer Bees. Gentle Ben, the union of tradition and invention.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.